What is up, guys? Welcome to the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. Just Kurt here doing some of these intros and maybe some updates. Happy be November 17th launch of this episode. We have some content getting cranked out here and some stories and updates and all that stuff. As of now, the Doug Eric Chip Challenge is an even race. And they're both being pretty vague on who's seen what, who's passing what. I know both of them have seen shooters, and both of them have seen deer that they couldn't get a shot at. It's vague. We'll dive into it. We'll try and get them on and get an updated episode going here like really quick. Just a heads up, I believe our Spotify, there's something going on. The newest CC Hunt Files episode did not update when it's supposed to. I'm digging in the back end, trying to get that figured out. So sorry about that. If you guys primarily listen on Spotify, and that's the case, if it's not fixed by now, you're not hearing it. Unless you dug in somewhere else to go to listen to your episodes. I also think I'm going to start putting regular episodes back up on the YouTube channel. YouTube's one of those things for us that's always just sucked ass completely. You know, I get it though. We don't really push our YouTube. It'd be great if you guys would go there and subscribe. If you guys want to see certain things, let us know. We'll try it. Always open to the idea of getting better at YouTube, but podcast is just where we're at. I think we're going to try and do a Black Friday sale in the store. We'll see what Eric's mood is and kind of go from there. And also, I just wanted to give you guys a heads up. Of course, keep an eye out for all our partners and Black Friday deals and holiday deals and stuff like that coming over here in the next week. Some of them are going on now. I know Camo Fire, Black Ovis has probably got stuff rocking now. So get on there and check that out. Moving on, I'm tagged out. I'm literally at the studio right now at 5, what a time is it? 6 o'clock while I'm doing this the night before launch, and I'm drinking a Natty Light. So I don't know what that says about me. And a lot of things have been pushed to the wayside. I was in the middle of a deep hustle trying to fill my second tag. And so a lot of emails got pushed back. Messages got pushed back. We need to do some Patreon updates, stuff like that. So I'm getting back on a normal schedule. Now, the other guys probably won't be. That's really it. So let's get to some biz. Big time. You should be hunting over your big time plots now if you have not filled the tag. If you need to get some seed, if you want to do some frost seeding, anything like that, code WCB2022. We love big time. It's just a great relationship. I always see us working with big time in one way or another. Hopefully, as long as we don't like say something to ruin our political careers and Joe decides that we're not worthy anymore. Yeah, I don't know. Also, Huntworth. Huntworth has been a hot topic of conversation in our Working Class Bowhunters group on Facebook and a big time in messages. And people are wondering, is the heat boost stuff worth the hype? The answer is, of course, you're going to say, of course, he's going to say yes. It's actually good shit. If we thought it was garbage, we wouldn't promote it like we do. It's kick ass. I rocked heat boost. I love it. It fits good. It looks good. Tarnin is becoming a very popular camouflage pattern. Seems like all my buddies that are getting some Huntworth clothing are rocking Tarnin camo. But no, the heat boost is the shit. The fit of everything is awesome. The pockets on everything is awesome. I still am delayed on getting a video out showing you what I wear during season. But if really until it's frigid, insanely like heavy layer cold, heat boost is going to rock me in until I can try and fill a tag. So check out the heat boost from Huntworth, code WCB15. Save yourself some money there. It's awesome shit. You'll love it. I promise you'll like it. Good stuff. And Novix tree stands, code WCB22. If the code is still active, I would say keep an eye out there for Black Friday deals, holiday deals at Novix. They don't really do much for discount sites and stuff like that and just big sales. So you need to take advantage when they are. They're pretty, and I get it. That's a good plan. They're rigid to where they're on sale on their promo codes. So jump on that deal. I killed my second buck, which I'll get into the story here soon, out of an Echo, and just love it. It stands the shit. A little bigger than the Hilo. I'll get into the whole story, though, but good American-made stuff. You know you feel good and you feel safe when you look down at the cast platform that says Made in USA, and you're like, man, that's a good feeling. So think about that, too. When you guys are like debating saving a little bit of money on some cheap Chinese painted shit, look down at a good piece of Novik's American made ethical quality right there and know that it's a feel good feeling, right? Feels good doing that shit, right? Also, Spy Point Trail Cams, the Flex, killing it. I got a lot of pictures of my second buck on the Flex. We'll dive into some of those stories here on an upcoming episode. Great quality photos. I just had my camera in the right spot. That's a good feeling. Scrapes was like my number one key for cameras this year. And I was never like I never obsessed over scrapes beforehand, but I guess Lee, the cult leader, kind of, you know, did the rope scrapes and I put a Flex on it. And that sounds cocky when you say it like that, put a Flex on it. But anyway, check out the Flex, the Spy Point Flex. Great camera, great quality. And if you normally have a cell cam that's like in a spot where you get service, the Flex could fix those problems for you. So check them out. Anyway, this episode going on. I'm thinking about giving you guys two episodes this week just for the fuck of it because we can. This one covers my mountain lion and my elk hunt because we haven't done the mountain lion episode yet. And Trey and Devin are in studio. So I figured we'd knock this out. And give you this episode. So hope you guys enjoy the stories and think, you know, if you're wanting to do a hunt like this and maybe it's not this year or down the road, hit Trey up and he'll help you out to kind of make some of these goals a reality for you. So just keep that in mind. And the link to everything's in the description. So enjoy it. Thanks for being here and thanks for the support.
I'm Chase Rolson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Buckman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
Working class. What is up, guys? Welcome to the podcast. And this week, we're talking hunting because we're a hunting podcast, and that's what we do. We talk about hunting. I'm the only actual working class bow hunter host in a full studio right now. Kurt Geyer speaking, my co-host in the building.
What's up, guys? It's Devin Leonard.
We need a dude counter on the house. If you can count how many times Devin says dude and prove it, we will throw in a free working class bow hunter hoodie. And what else can we throw in?
The working class bow hunter t-shirt, the new design, 300 box club. We'll throw one of those in too.
How about just talk about that? Maybe that's just what they can do. They can just get on that.
Okay. So for 100 box club, if you guys want to get, actually you explain the design and then I'll give them the offer.
Okay. So we talked about doing a special exclusive design for Hunter's Box Club.
Yep.
And then we were kind of going back and forth. I'm like, man, like a hunting camp vibe would be the best way to do it. I think because that's what everyone's doing right now. Like, hey, can we do a cabin in the woods or like the working class bow hunter studio look in the woods, put the logo on the front. And so you worked with a designer, had him do that, and we'll do a whitetail in the background. Well, yeah. It came out as an elk on accident, but I'm like, dude, it looks so rad. Just run it as an elk because we just got done with elk camp. So yep. It fits in perfect with this episode.
Yeah. So it's supposed to be whitetail, ended up being an elk, but we did think it was cool because resembles Kurt's elk hunt, which is what this podcast is about, right?
We're talking mountain lion and the elk. We've been so lazy on that mountain lion story, Trey and Devin and me.
Yeah, so we're going to get it done today. We're going to tell you guys about the time when the mountain lion jumped out of the tree, almost cut off my jugular. Thank goodness Kurt made...
Talk about this offer.
Though. Okay, anyway. That's the hook, dude. I'm like getting the hook, so okay, I have to stay. Anyway. Okay, so... We got the t-shirt, guys. We're going to give you guys this t-shirt for free inside the Hunter's Box Club. All we ask is that you guys cover shipping. Inside the box, you guys are also going to get a can koozie with the Working Class Bow Hunter logo on it. And you're also going to get a measuring tape to tape out your next big buck. So these are top quality t-shirts. If you guys have bought a Working Class Bow Hunter t-shirt before, it's the same brand.
Mm-hmm.
This is just going to be a different design. The only way to get this t-shirt for free is you got to click the link in the bio.
Mm-hmm. In the episode description.
Yep, in the episode, yep. And then make sure that you guys, we're going to give away, so dude, I don't know this, so I'm not going to say that, but make sure that you guys order it. Make sure you guys order it before November, because after November, is this going to launch before November, though?
Yeah, should. If it doesn't, then the offer's over. Yeah, it will. It will.
All right. So I'll just, okay, I'll go the extra mile. If you guys get it from this link, we will make sure that you guys get the t-shirt. Does that work?
Yeah, it works.
Okay.
Cool.
Did I cover it?
Yeah. Just
click the link and
get an exclusive Hunter's Box Club Working Class Bow Hunter box.
The worst ad I've ever done.
Well, Whitetail Camp Gone Elk. Hey, by the way, I know you have stuff from the box here.
Yeah.
I just went and measured a G2. I opened one of those tape measures. I hope that's all right.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I like that the tape is black.
Dude, I like the black ones too. We got more of them.
Yeah, those are slick. That's a good upgrade.
Yeah.
Good upgrade. Trey Heiner's in the house. What's up, buddy?
Not much. Just enjoying the time.
I'm glad you're here. Still here. We're getting a lot of podcast time in with you boys.
Yeah, just tripled my record, I think.
Tripled it. We got the most interesting man in the Midwest, Judd McCollum.
How's it going? You're going to have to start charging me rent.
I am. Fun fact, Franco is on the phone. What's up, Franco?
What's up, guys?
Franco has not met Judd, and Franco's on the phone because he's still killing stuff. But fun fact about Judd, he found the largest.
It's pretty big.
The largest mammoth tusk in North America here in Illinois.
Wow, that's really cool.
So that makes him kind of an awesome dude. Marcus is in the house still.
How's it going, guys?
Good. How are you?
Good.
And Mrs. You're married. Queer for Deer, Casey Thompson is in the building.
Hello, ladies.
Our favorite gay. Thanks for being here.
That's me.
I love that we have a token gay.
Yeah.
Well, is that offensive?
I think it's awesome.
Not for me, it isn't.
Well, then that's all that matters.
Yeah, it's fine.
We love you.
It's all good.
I'm glad you're here.
I like it.
You cool with Mrs.?
I guess.
Talking about cougars, we're going to talk
about cougars.
Speaking of cougars, we're going to talk about mountain lion hunting. And this is something that really just hanging out with Trey. Trey, you do elk hunts, mule deer hunts, bear hunts, lion hunts. I mean, what am I missing? You do it really. If you can hunt it out west, you guide it.
Yeah, for the most part, pretty sure.
So someone, because we booked a couple of lion hunts at the Iowa Deer Classic last year, just shortly after I did my lion hunt. There's some people that kind of interested. But if you hear this story or a lion hunt has been on your radar and you never knew where to start, because I talked to people like Judd, for example, like, oh, yeah, I never really even thought about it or like took steps to take action to make it a reality. They can just hit you up at Grays River Outfitting and get a lion hunt set up.
Yeah, for sure. So it's kind of a unique deal compared to like deer, elk, and that. You can just buy this tag right over the counter.
Which is shocking. Like I didn't even think that was a thing before I went on my hunt.
Yeah, so if you're like, think your year's out before you make it out west, I mean, it's something you can go do. You can hunt lions this year and bear the next year while you're building points for your deer or elk hunts.
And what's cool about it is it's, so, well, I guess deer season was still going at home, but the way we did it, we kind of were like, oh, yeah, if you want to come shoot a lion, we'll go lion hunting for a couple of days. We get one cool. If we don't, we don't. That's what we said. I was like pretty casually, you know. And then what we did was I told Devin, I was like, hey, man, I think I want to come out and try and hunt a lion with Trey. Like, how fun would it be if all our families just hung out and out there in Wyoming in the winter and we get an Airbnb and we celebrated New Year's out there. Yeah. So we basically made it like a family outing. So we brought the family along and it's cold and snowing and all that. And I just remember talking to Trey. I'm like, man, like 1 or 2 days of hunting max. If we get a chance to kill a lion, that'd be awesome. But if not, then we're just going to hang with the family. Let's sled the rest. Basically do tubing and all that. And, so that's kind of like where this whole trip started off. So I was like, man, I don't want to hunt more than 2 days just because my family and all of our families would just be like, hey, well, you brought us out here and you guys are just hunting the whole time.
Yeah. We brought the wives, the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was super fun. Yeah. And Wyoming's just so beautiful in the winter. It's crazy, but the story is not that long. Which is great for our families. That's kind of what we're getting at. But it was a really cool experience for me. Like, because Trey, I don't know if you understand this or, you know, the Western boys get this.
mountain lions here, and I don't know, Franco, how much you know too, but mountain lions here are kind of almost like folklore.
Yeah.
And not that people think they don't exist, but there's always, somebody's always has a mountain lion story here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always this like 400 pound cat that's like eating people's cattle and dragging calves up trees. It's always like super exaggerated and just, you know, it's kind of bullshit. Like maybe guys are seeing them. I believe mm-hmm. that there is some out here, but it's always just some ridiculous story of conversation. Yeah.
So what does a big cat weigh?
I mean, a big cat's like 160 plus.
That's,
I mean,
like a giant cat?
Yeah, there's, I mean, there is 200 plus pound toms out there, but like,
kind of freaking nature.
Yeah, that's like killing a 250 plus whitetail, you know?
No kidding. Well, I mean, regardless, if you ever try to hold down a house cat that weighs 8 pounds and not get scratched, I guess any cat that's over 80 in my book is a big cat.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you think about it, like, you ever try to wrestle a house cat?
Yeah.
Nobody wants to do that.
No.
Not fun. So you take an animal that's basically the same animal, just magnituded up. It is like a giant house cat. That's all I could think of. Seeing them, how they do, they're just huge cats. And so it's just interesting. But, yeah, went out, had no idea what to expect. Trey's got snowmobiles. And I guess, do people, you provide snowmobiles if somebody wants to book a hunt?
Yep.
You have extra snowmobiles. Bring your winter gear. And then we go in, and then, like, the tactic is just try and cut a track, right?
Yeah, yeah, I can give you a whole rundown. So,
yeah.
Early season, before the snow gets deep, I'm like, I just killed one the day before I come out here.
Casually?
Yeah, so just.
He's like, yep, we did.
Pretty much, yeah, so we just.
Hey, vague his flight back. Got delayed, so he went and killed a cat.
I'm saving deer.
Vague Trey is back. Remember we called Trey out for being vague?
Oh, yeah.
We need Trey time.
Yes.
So, yeah, so we'll just run up the canyons early in the dark of the morning in the trucks and stuff. And as soon as we cut a track, find a track, then we'll just get the dogs, collar them up, and kick them on the track. But, you know, later once the snow starts getting deep, we're covering a lot of country on snowmobile and cutting up and down canyons. And, yeah, the name of the game is just find a track that you can do something with and dump mm-hmm. dogs and go.
It's fascinating. It's such an interesting process. And it feels like when we first went out, because just processing like the experience, I remember riding out. I'm like, how are we going to find a track? Because then you guys are looking, and I'm like, it's just pointless for me to look. I'm trying.
And you guys are going pretty fast on those snowmobiles.
Yeah, they got their own look about them. Like, yeah. I do it enough. I can.
That you know.
I can. Yeah. If it's pretty clean snow, not a lot of elk tracks and stuff mixed in,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can cut 30, 40 miles an hour.
And just look.
Wow.
Yeah. If it's good.
You're not using dogs when you're sledding, right?
No. They're in a sleigh back behind, getting towed.
Behind the snowmobile.
Oh, yeah. So you're eventually going to get those dogs on that track, though.
Yep.
Yeah, as soon as we've cut a track, then we'll dump
so
the dogs.
So it's not too deep for them?
No, the lion's creating the trail. They're just following the lion. And, you know, and it's just like, you know, your whitetail and everything else, you know, there's different tips and tricks to make it easier and more successful. Like if I cut a lion heading one direction, you know, I'll leapfrog canyons till I don't cut them anymore and then kind of narrow them down. So
mm-hmm.
you don't have a 10-mile race.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating. Like that whole process, like watching you guys look for tracks. I'm like, dude, I went no one else. I was right on top of it. Like you'd have to be like, that's a lion track. You know, I mean, I just not trained for that. So it's cool to like have that experience going down. But when we went on snowmobiles, we were going through, and we were pretty far in, I felt like.
It was cold when you were there.
It was real cold. I think it was like, 7 degrees that day, the morning? Well, it might have been colder than that one in the dark. But I think the high was like 7, right?
Probably.
Something like that. Because it would have been, I don't remember dates exactly. It was just before New Year's.
Yeah.
So it was end of December. And then I remember we were like, 42 miles, something like that back?
Camp is what?
Yeah, we were at camp at 38.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so close. And then we actually crossed a track, but we thought it could have been old. I can't remember.
It was a day old.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, and it was heading into some winter closure areas, like that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So we kept cutting everything else.
Yeah.
Then our way back out, I was like, well, I'm going to investigate that track a little bit more. And so I dove off there, and I jumped that lion off a kill there.
Yeah, deer kill.
Had a deer killed there. And then it was like game on.
Dude, I remember it being like, you came out, you're like, I just jumped that line off that kill. And I just remember being like, oh, I think this is where it starts to get real.
Dude, that's when I remember getting excited.
Yeah.
Because at that point, we made the trek up to camp, which was, what, 38 miles. We shoveled off the camp.
That, for the record, blew my mind that, like, you have one of your canvas wall tents up there, and it's just, like, we're out there shoveling snow on it, and the snow's, like, almost as high as, like, to the sidewall, the top of the sidewall.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's insane out there.
That was just December. You get towards February, and that, I mean, you can see the tops.
See, that's so nuts to me. But, like, seeing that country and that, like, winter, it's winter wonderland.
Yeah.
And also, very dangerous feeling.
So we're heading back out
from the
like we're
the
going
camp.
Yeah, we're going back home basically, and maybe we'll get lucky and see another track. And then Trey decides to investigate it.
Yep.
And then I just remember being so excited that we finally like got a track that we're going to go after Trey jumps that cat.
Yeah.
And we're like, dude, I can still remember like filming you on my phone, dude.
Yeah.
We're like, we got a cat track.
But by the way, the video of this is out on our YouTube.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, it's out.
Mm-hmm. Nice, dude.
So, yeah, I remember that. I was like, oh, shit, we're getting the dogs out. So that was cool seeing that process. And then basically you let the dogs go. And you have like, there's tracking collars, I guess is the way, so you can see what they're doing.
Yeah, so this Garmin GPS tracking collars, it's just like every other hunting it. Aspect the technology is advanced so much, so it'll tell me which dog, how fast he's going, how many barks per minute he's barking. It'll show me when he's treed.
No kidding.
Right where he's treed, you know. So I know the country's so good. I'm like, all right. So typically, I can get us if we can get snowballs around. I can get us within typically 100 yards of.
Which is badass.
Most of the time, sometimes it can be. Cruciating, but
well, so I remember we get going and it's kind of down by like some water. The dogs get going, and I think the lion crossed the water, then crossed back,
yeah,
and end up working
the river,
yeah, the river, and going into a canyon. And I don't know if they went in one canyon, jumped over. I'm trying to remember because we started going down the wrong canyon at first,
yeah, we looked at the topo map a little wrong on it because it's just a narrow dividing ridge there.
Right.
And they were on the other side, and we beat up the wrong canyon first.
But it gets so chaotic. It's just like, we got to go now. Let's get in there. And I'm like, it's a rush. So we're like off-roading, picking up snowmobiles to get them through these trees to try and get them back. One guy that was with us flips his snowmobile and rolls it down a hill.
Dude, he's like, I watched the whole thing happen. So there's the road. The old dirt, well, not the old road, but there's a road, and it's now covered with snow. And Brandon, right?
Was it? I think it was Dave.
It was Dave.
Crashed. That's right. So he's gonna go. So he's gonna ride his snowmobile from the road, and he's just gonna floor it and go straight up the bank, which is maybe about 10 yards.
Straight up.
And straight up, but instead of like being able to make it, dude, he runs into a tree. The snowmobile kind of like does like a, and all I see, dude, is because I'm up on top, so he's trying to like jump and come up on top where I'm at. But he kind of like hits the tree. I see the top of his snowmobile, and all of a sudden he's like does like a backwards flip back down towards the road. And I'm like, dude, this is not good. Like, dude, I'm thinking like, oh shit, this looks bad the way that I seen it. But dude, that tough son of a gun, dude. He's like, I'm okay. He's like trying to get it up. I'm all like, and then you came down and helped. Oh no, that was Brandon that helped him. Brandon helped him like put it back up on like the right way. But dude, that was nuts.
I felt pretty bad that he wrecked his snowmobile. Yeah. But we get in there, and it's just, I don't know. From my perspective, I'm like, there's a lion, and we're going in, and I'm going to see a mountain lion for the first time. So for me, it's like, oh, shit, a little bit, you know, excited. And then I'm worried, like, if I get a shot, to me, it's scary to wound a lion. And then, like, that's what I'm processing. Like, is a dog going to get hurt if I mess up a shot? I don't know what the chances are of that. Could one of us get hurt if I don't hit it right? Maybe. I don't know. To me, that's all a possibility. I don't know what the actual likelihood, like if you wound a lion for him to jump on a dog or one of us. What is the likelihood?
It does happen, right?
It does happen, yeah, for sure. I mean, I've never had him get a person, but like, or seen him get a person. But,
mm-hmm.
But dogs, for sure. So, like, yeah, if you wound it, then I got to let dogs go again.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we're not going to be able to catch up to a lion.
Yeah.
So I got to let them dogs go again. And typically, the lion can't climb up a tree again if he's wounded bad enough.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's a dog fight on the ground.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah, and if you're, or if he does end up going and dying and your broadheads are still in them, them dogs are
chewing on them.
But yeah, you can get dog cup there.
Oh, I never even considered that part of it.
Yeah.
It's just it's kind of hectic. It's crazy. It's cool, though. We got the video playing in studio. Sorry, Frank. I wish you were here, buddy.
Nah, me too.
He's like, yeah, I really wish I was. But it was cold, man. It was real cold, but it was so cool. So we get up there, and there's a footage of us climbing the mountain. And I hate that it doesn't look as steep, and the snow doesn't look nearly as deep as it felt.
Yeah, it's like right there, we were out of breath right there.
Dude. Yeah, yeah.
Climbing up in that deep snow, the steep hill.
So you just hear, once we get up to where the dogs have the lion treat, it's just barking and kind of chaos. And those dogs are incredible. Like, it's just a different type of hunting that you got to experience. I loved it.
So if you guys actually go watch this on YouTube, you will see where the lion almost got my jugular. This is no lie, dude. This fucking no lion joke. About jumps on me. I'm
landed
fucking
right,
right
on top of you.
It's close.
This
it really
is no shit, dude. So, and thank goodness Kurt made a good shot.
Let's talk about
dude, how high is the stoke level, though?
Like, all right, we got
Kurt, for you. Is this is like as is. Is it as exciting as a big, like a toad coming into your stand and Devin and Trey, like a big mule deer you're coming across? Like, is it same level?
I will say this. The level of excitement of opportunity, like here it is in front of you, make the shot, is probably like equally the same. I will say for me, just because I've never seen a mountain lion, I've never done this, the dogs are barking, and then all your buddies are kind of around you while you shoot adds a different layer of pressure to it as well.
But also pretty fun.
Super fun. But also, the another thing to consider is the angle of the shot. Mm-hmm. It's like a tree stand shot, but opposite.
In reverse.
So where normally your exit hole is, you're aiming for your normally what's your exit hole, for your exit hole to be what your entry hole would be from a tree stand, if that makes sense. So it flips the entry to exit. And then it just seems high pressure because don't wound this thing, because it's more work to go down the mountain. The dogs are involved. So it's just kind of like it's a heavy experience.
Yeah.
And I will say that the adrenaline, like the aftershot shakes, lasted significantly longer than any other hunt I've ever been on. Like, I remember, like, we got all the way back to the main road in to, like, the backcountry, and I still remember having, like, the aftershot shakes all the way back to that point.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because of the excitement of it all. Was so cool.
Because I've seen cats out west and way too close for comfort in some circumstances, but I've never hunted one.
Yeah.
And hearing you guys talk about it, it's like, oh man, this is crazy.
It seems crazy. Trey, you're probably pretty numb to like what it feels like for somebody who's never even seen a lion, because you do it often. But it's, maybe you're not though.
No, I'm sure I am.
Yeah.
It's just like anything. Like, you know, I hunt cats a lot and stuff. Like, you see a 120 deer come in, you're like, yeah, you know,
yeah,
like if I see, like, you know, I get a big tom, 170 plus pound tom, you know, it's a rush and it's exciting.
Yeah.
And that's a whole different aspect. They're, you know, they don't put up with much. They're typically a lot more honor and aggressive.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, that's a good way to probably break it down. But, you know, I'm like, well, shit, we're doing this, you know. So it gets real fast once you get up there. So this shot here in the video, I'll just play this video while we're kind of narrating. It's a good reminder. The dogs are like jumping up the tree. It's crazy. So in my head, I'm just like, I just want to shoot this thing. And Trey's like, you want to take some pictures? And then, so under this, there's Brandon films me, and he's to my left of me shooting. I had to thread it through like a basketball size hole. And then Devin gets underneath the tree and is filming up. So watching this for everybody in the studio, this is Brandon's angle. So he's standing on my right. And you can see my basketball-sized, about that hole that I had to shoot through. So that was kind of nerve-wracking, you know, the angle, lots of factor. And I hoisted a target up in my tree in my backyard. That's how I practiced for this hunt.
There's the shot.
So there's the... So this is...
You know, oh, there he comes.
The Plinko. There's Devin almost getting landed on. Like,
he almost got my jugular, dude.
I saw his claw. His claw almost got you. But it's
that big claw.
That cat actually probably landed 4 foot from you, honestly.
Oh man,
that's what I'm saying. Landed right where you were standing. If you hadn't moved, you'd have been wearing it.
Here's Devin's angle. Devin's underneath it when I shoot it, which is crazy thinking about.
Oh yeah. Here's where he about gets me, dude.
I saw him say, dude, he was like going for your jugular.
Yep, there it is.
It's just Plinko. Ding, 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 ding.
Dude, you, oh, dude, it's like and if full we had the white volume out.
On, dude, I'm like yelling, dude. Save me!
Save me!
You yell?
Devin.
How often do they get up and start just taking off right after your clients shoot them?
More times than not.
I was going to say, I don't think I've ever seen a cat just drop and not run.
Yeah, sometimes, but more times than not, they'll at least run 30, 40 yards at least.
Because I heart shot him, baby.
Ooh.
I don't know. I'm assuming I did because he didn't move, but maybe I didn't. It felt good.
Yeah, what dog? We had Monkey and Kitty there. Did we have Waldo? I don't know if we did.
No, just the two.
And can you shoot females, or are you just going after toms?
No, you can shoot females. So
this was a female.
You know, that's houndsman. That gets into a whole other topic of cutthroat and drama. But so I lion hunt. I mean, to save deer. That's why I just kill lions. So
is it taboo generally to kill a female lion?
Yeah, the houndsmen hate it. Like other lion hunters, they want a healthy lion population. They want a bunch of lions to run.
Something to do.
Yeah, it gets expensive when you have to go out and cut 100 miles a day trying to find a lion track. They want to be able to just go up the first canyon and find a lion and run their dogs and take pictures and let it go, you know.
Mm-hmm. But your goal is predator control.
Yeah, I'm predator control. I
think I would lean that way a lot more too, because it's the same thing we do with like coyotes. If we had lions, a huntable lion population here, I think I'd be the same way with them.
Completely ignore deer if there were lions here.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah. But just a cool experience. I was fortunate to make a good shot, and it was awesome, man. So I appreciate it.
Yeah.
It was so fun. And we got done the day one, so our wives were happy, and we got to Trey wasn't involved, but Devin and I, we skinned it out and had a party, and then we ate it.
Yeah.
And Trey was like, I'm good on that, but...
Mountain lion tastes like pork.
100%. It is pork, pretty much.
It is white meat. It just looks just like pork.
If someone cooked up the pork or loin from a lion, you'd be like, yeah, it's pork loin.
Yeah.
100%.
So we just kind of cooked it, but some people say mountain lion is some of the best meat they've ever had.
Do you have to be worried about trichinosis with those?
Yes.
Just like pork, yeah.
Franco, have you ever ate mountain lion?
No, I never have, but I really want to.
See, so I just see... So, have you ate bear, Franco?
Bear does.
Yeah, no, I love bear meat.
It just, with predators, it's like 50-50, I feel like, with guys. They're always like, ugh, or, yeah, well, we ate that, you know?
It's probably like what they're eating on. That's what I would think, you know? Like bear and cougar, they're eating on, you know, a dead carcass or whatnot. Or, you know, I guess a cougar's always eating something.
But a mountain lion won't eat rotten meat, but a bear will.
Yeah.
So I guess if you're going to eat one, probably the lion would be the better thing to eat because it's eating fresh meat.
But then with bear, did you want to eat the bears that are like eating berries?
And donuts.
Coming up.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Get some
Mexican snack
things
cakes.
Things get all plump.
You just get the beatus from eating bear meat.
Trichinosis, bro.
So if someone has a lion hunt on their radar, how do they go about booking a lion hunt with you, Trey?
Yeah, just call me. You can get on my website, grazeroutfitters.com.
Cool.
Or get in touch with Kurt. He can give you my number. Just send a deposit. We do have a few spots, one or two spots open we can get you in this year. And
Chandler wants to do it this year, I think. I don't know if he's talked to you about it. He always flirts with that idea, but I think it's high on his bucket list.
Gotcha, yeah.
So, but yeah, man, it was a blast. It's at Old Barn. We ate it. So for anybody wondering, it was a good time.
So how much time do you carve out for a lion hunt? How much time should you plan for?
They're a week. I have a 5-day hunt.
Yep.
It's a hunt. Like I can't guarantee it, but
right.
You're probably going to kill one.
Will they camp? Will they stay at the camp?
So yeah, it depends where we're hunting that day. We'll either stay right there at my ranch.
Okay.
Ranch house or right up at camp in the wall tents. Just depends.
Nice.
That'd be cool. That'd be cool in the winter to stay in the wall tent.
Oh, dude.
It's just
I
want to
do that so bad.
It's a different experience that you can't really experience anywhere else. Like
Nobody does that.
Yeah, it's neat.
In the States, I don't think.
The wall tents are badass. And it's like that snow is like an insulator that time of year, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it is.
Which is crazy.
It's like eerie quiet. Like it's silent in the winter.
Yeah. It was cool, man. It's one of the craziest experiences I've ever had. And it's funny, you know, coming back home, it's like It's fairly common practice out west. You know, here it's like, you shot a lion? Or they don't even call them that. They just call them whatever.
Whatever crazy name they can think
of.
Yeah,
that thing, it weighs like 400 pounds. I'm like, probably not, because one, I'm not that strong. Look at me. I'm holding it. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, it's like everybody thinks coyotes are 80 pounds.
Yeah.
It's not true. So, but no, it was a great time. Great time. I'm excited about it. But yeah, so thank you guys.
You know, I think one thing I want to talk to Trey about is what I think is crazy is how there's two dogs and a mountain lion. And if they really had a fight, the mountain lion would win.
Oh, that lion could jump out and kill them dogs.
And that's so mind-boggling to me. So what is it about the lion that allows the two hounds to, like, tree him and take control and just overpower him?
You know, I don't know. Just cat, dog. I guess.
That's actually pretty good. Yeah. Even though this cat is... Yeah, okay, cat.
The dogs are loud and kind of just...
It's just easier for them to stay up there.
I have lost
It's almost the confidence of the dogs that just, like, throws off the cat. It's like, oh, yeah. these dudes are big. They're talking big. Like,
but I wonder, too, it's like cautious. The cat's kind of doing cat things, and then all of a sudden he's like, oh, shit. Like, yeah, these dogs are coming up on me. I got to go. And then they're treed, and then they're on the defense right away.
So how many dogs have you lost?
A couple.
Out of a tree, off a cliff, or like...
Not lions.
I know, but how'd it happen? Were they...
One, he was dead when I got there.
So, okay.
Like, and the other dog had it treed up a ways from him. So I think they treed it, got into it there on the fight there on the ground.
No kidding.
They just bite their head. Just bite right through the skull.
Just crunch
it. And the other one, the hunter wounded it, and they got... Had to let dogs go. They got down at a log jam. And
they, on the ground, they got...
Yeah, them lions will just reach out and grab, pull them dogs in and just bite right through their skull.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
See, I did not want that to happen.
No,
it's got to have a crazy sporty bite force to do that.
And those dogs are so awesome.
Yeah, they're like the friendliest pups, and then all of a sudden you put a track from them,
they're just ready.
I mean, it's just a whole other species, it seems like.
Yeah, but they're like such a sweet dog. I'd feel so terrible if I was like the reason on a bad shot or something, you know. It's like, but anyway, I didn't have to worry about that. So we got it done. So
it's just a cool experience. Like it's the winter range basically.
Yeah.
Where the cats are down there around all the deer and elks. You see a ton of wildlife.
Yeah. Oh, it's so beautiful.
We saw that one big bull as we were going up the road, almost to camp.
It was cool.
That was cool.
The whole thing is mind blowing. It's like winter wonderland. You know what it reminded me of? You ever seen of Christmas Vacation where they're like, it's funny because it's based out of Chicago, but then when they go to cut down that Christmas tree, all of a sudden they're in like the mountains of Wyoming. And like when they're trudging through, you know what movie I'm talking about? Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
He's like walking through the mountains to get that Christmas tree, and they're in the, that's what it looks like out there. You know what I mean? It's just beautiful, you know, just winter wonderland. But you can see in the photos, it's like there's so much snow. Like, you can see it's, like, almost up to my knee there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's early. You get a little later, and there's a lot more.
It's a good time. Well, let's move on to the next segment. Let's talk some elk hunting. So Franco is sitting there stir-crazy. Franco's dancing right now, I bet, on the phone. I just feel like
it's he's
like,
dancing anyways.
He's dancing right now.
Hold on. What's your nickname again? Ballet. Italian Stallion Golden Medallion?
With the gold medallion, that's correct. Yes.
Okay.
That's correct.
I love it, dude. Okay, let's go. Okay, let's go. Now that we got that straightened out.
Let's get, Franco, let's get some background on you, man. How long have you been guiding?
This will be my 12th season, and started right out of high school and was taking people to tree stands in Olympia, Washington, and met some guy and there and took me to Montana. I started cooking and went to guide school, and after a couple of years of cooking, they made me go shoot an elk, and after that I started guiding, and man, I've been guiding ever since, and man, it's been a good career so far. Pretty blessed.
That's pretty cool, man. It's something that like guys I feel like always talk about in the Midwest doing after high school, like, and that's why we gave Red so much credit, one of Trey's guides, you know, from Wisconsin, left to go do Trey's guide school and guides. Like, it's stuff that I got people either always talk about doing, or when they're older, like, if I could do it over, I would have done that. So it's cool to actually meet dudes who just did it, like adventurous type 11, which is cool.
Yeah. And on that note too, we're going to start that back up, that guide school.
When's that start? If someone's interested?
It'll be summer. I think Franco's actually going to be the one to take over and start running that a little bit.
Are you excited for that, Franco, or is that kind of like a
a heavy responsibility.
You know what? I'm excited to do it. So, I love what I do, and I've been doing what I know that works for me. And I'd love to teach some people. So I think it'd be great to keep the industry alive.
Sure. Yeah. How many guys do you take for that? How many slots?
I'll probably try to hold around 6.
Okay. So if they're interested, hit us up. We'll get you in contact with Trey or Franco.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's a great way to get a start. And I mean, we're kind of in our area, the head of the industry. You know, we have all the right connections to send them whatever way they really want to go.
So all those people out there that message us and say, hey, I want to get in the industry. What do I do? And one of my answers is work retail somewhere. And that's honestly a good way into the industry. Or here you go. If you want to tap directly into the hunting aspect of the industry, attending a guide school is a very direct way to get your foot in the outdoor industry. And that's a great opportunity, really, from my perspective.
Yeah, you know? you'll learn if you have what it takes, like, pretty quick. I mean, we threw you to the test, and if you're going to make something, you'll know if you're not going to be, if it's not for you. I mean,
you'll know really fast.
You'll know fast, and we'll probably let you know too.
Yeah, but that's fair though.
Yeah,
mad credit to the guides. I mean, what you guys do, Franco and Trey and the rest of the crew, you know, Red, Brad, and the rest of the guides. You guys, I mean. It's tough grit, but I feel like you guys enjoy it a little bit. Like, you guys kind of take pride in that it is hard work. But because, from my perspective, it has to be so rewarding when you have a client come out successful and you get to share, like, those type of moments with them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And we're doing so much pre-work, you know. It's like, when they kill, it's like us killing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hunting target animals and... Just like you on your whitetail.
Yeah.
Like when you finally get that, how much prep it takes to get them killed and you finally make it happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just as much the guide as the hunter. Or more so. On the western side, it's harder to guide one than actually kill it yourself, 100%.
Yeah, just because there's so much not in control. And Franco, you know, we met you in spring working class bow hunter bear camp out at Trey's. That was the first time we met. And then... I got to hunt with you, so my archery tag turns into a firearm tag, I guess. I don't know if you go from firearm tags or what you call them, rifle or
whatever. We know.
It's firearm here. but it was cool because, you know what, I knew you, Franco, but it was like, hey, man, we're doing this. And I don't know, Franco's super ambitious, and you're very good at what you do. Not only in the hunting aspect, but like, I guess if any client's going to come out, if they're going to go with Franco, it's like, you're going to have a good time. Like you basically got them covered from if they're going to struggle getting up a mountain or down or a horse issue or whatever. So, it's a good dude to have along with you, Trey.
I'll add to that. I mean, I've been around it for a long time and had a lot of different guides come through and had some awesome ones, but. Franco is probably by far one of the best, if not the best, just far as detail, taking care of the hunters, going the extra miles to do what he's got to do to keep the hunter safe.
For sure.
Enjoyable conversations. He's top notch.
Franco, did that take time to learn all that, or does it come naturally?
I appreciate that, guys. Thank you. I appreciate those kind words. I think just trial and error and you know, I guess that's life, just, you know, learning from experience and, you know, failing and then doing it over time after time, and, you know, hunting the same animal, you know, day after day. But, it took years to learn, and working down in Mexico and working down in Arizona with some boys down there that knew how to kill and, like, set up the gun before the hunter, you know, while he's catching his breath. And there's just, like, all these little things that, you know, you can minimize, you know, for the hunter as, you know, you're hunting the animal. And it just takes years of experience and trial and error. And, there's not one hunt that I guide now that I don't learn something. So every single hunt, I'm always learning. So,
yeah, and that says a lot, too, for as much as you guys hunt. I mean, you guys grind. And every time I'm out in your guys' camp, Trey, I'm like, dude, you guys are up before all the hunters are up. You're saddling horses. You're loading just –
the amount and length of work. I'll be honest, I do not have what it takes to do a guide school. I could not do what you got. I could do it for a week or two, but I could not do it for as long. The amount of hard work you guys put in to these hunts and make sure your clients are successful is beyond fuck. You can't even wrap your fucking head around it. And I mean, I know, Devin, you've seen a lot. It is an incredible amount of work. And it just blows my mind that you guys do it as much as you do it day in and day out for that period of time is pretty damn incredible. So mad props to you guys. And it does feel like, Frank, when we went out, it felt just as fresh going with you like I was your first client. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Got to keep that tempo up.
Yeah, like I didn't have the vibe that like, oh, this dude's been grinding it for months.
Even though he had been, right? And
that he had
like,
been.
Yeah, at that point, Franco had been up at camp for quite some time.
Yeah, a month and a half.
So he could have easily been burned out by then.
And that's not like, he hunted 3 days a week. You're in and out every day.
Yeah, crazy. Every day. Yeah, Franco's got the passion, dude. Like, dude, I think I've only met you at camp a few times, but, dude, like, that's one guy that's got the passion, you know? Not only the passion for guiding, not only the passion for, like, the camp, the horses, the passion for, like, camaraderie, hunt.
That's big.
And, dude, that's what it takes. And like I said, dude, Frank, I've only met you a few times, but I know you got that.
I appreciate that, guys. Yeah, no, it takes a passion, it takes a love for it. And, we're literally living a lifestyle out there. So,
long do you plan on doing this for, dude?
Ever.
I plan on doing it for the rest of my life. I know an old, like an 83-year-old man. Uh-huh. That still packs in his own camp on his back. He's got a wall tent. He's got a wood stove. I want to be that 83-year-old guy on the trail someday. So, I'm gonna do this for the rest of my life. I absolutely love it. And I don't know. Just being in town for the last week is, I'm ready to get back out in the hills and get back to hunting and doing what I know.
You'll have a Grazer outfitter hat on the whole time.
I may have one on right now.
Trey's checking in on you. He's like, you're wearing the shit, right? Well, you know, when I went out for archery elk, I had like, I think every elk, well, I don't want to say every elk experience, all the thought about Midwestern thoughts that you think about elk hunting with a bow, except for double lung and one, right, Devin? I mean, it's like, how close did we get on the daily with a bow? Like,
close.
The theme was just so close, just no cigar. And that's fine, right? Like, it's.
And that's what made it fun, though, dude.
So much fun.
And, dude, yeah.
That's part of it. That's
dude.
Bow hunting out west.
It was the best. It was everything I could have asked for an experience. Like, I didn't even leave Matt. What's up, guys? Interrupting the episode yet again. Trying to be nice with these. Podcast is brought to you by Camo Fire. Get on CamoFire, CamoFire.com. It's revolving deals. Basically, there's a deal. Could be like 30 to 70% off or more. It varies. And that deal only lasts until the time runs out, and then it refreshes and there's new deals. So if there's something you need, get on there. Check out CamoFire. Tell them we sent you, or download the app, and then you don't have to worry about deleting your browser history so your old lady don't know where you're shopping. Also, Trophy Line. The Vanatic, did you guys see the big National Saddle Hunting Day giveaway? Pretty kick-ass. They picked some winners. We're going to get a podcast in. Pick the first and second place winner. We're going on a turkey hunt with them in Pennsylvania. It's going to be a good time. But check out that new Vanatic. And there's some new Trophy Line products coming. They teased in that giveaway. Did you see it? Check it out. Use code WCB on everything Trophy Line. Tell them we sent you. They're good people over there. Also, Leupold Optics. Michael and his son from Leupold were just in hunting with Austin. His son shot a good buck. We didn't get to podcast with them while they were in, but you know, Michael always says, don't have FOMO in the tree stand. And I think it's an underrated thing to not have optics with you typically in the whitetail woods. I'm telling you, I couldn't go without it. I feel naked without the optics. And you just know. You know, you see a buck over there, you put your binos up, and you can see everything you need to see. If you hit a deer and he runs out to 80 yards and you can't see what's going on with them, if you're unsure about the shot, put your binos up. See where he shot him. It's things like that that good optics make a difference rather than having shitty optics or no optics at all. So
That's why I like them. I keep them in a bino harness right there with my loophole rangefinder ready to go. It's a handy tool. You need to have it at the ready. So keep that in mind. Get a good set of optics, and you really make up a lot in details that you wouldn't have had otherwise running lesser or no optics at all. So think about that. And when you do, think about getting into a loophole setup. Good shit. Also, Old Barn Taxidermy. We're getting a lot of critters there. Doug and Eric don't have any critters there right now, though. Well, technically they do, but not this year. So what's that say? Where's this chip bet going? Is Old Barn going to have to do some sort of wild card for these boys for this chip bet? I don't know, but check out Old Barn Taxidermy. The G2 forms, they're doing meat processing. They're one of the biggest tanneries in the country. Chances are your taxidermist that you use wherever you're at, if you're not local, might use Old Barn for their tannery. Ask them. Also, ask your local taxidermist about a G2 form. Just be like, hey, what's up with them G2 forms from Old Barn? Can I get into one of them? They're great. We have a bunch of them here on the studio wall. Great looking form. We get a lot of compliments on them. So very, very pleased with everything Old Barn is doing. And Scent Crusher. We have a closet here at the studio. I've been running the Ozone Go, everything in my truck. Basically get rid of Casey's Pizza Square smells, if you want to know the entire truth. But Scent Crusher, obviously always killing it. Been loving working with that company for a while. So thank you guys for supporting them. And if you haven't tried Scent Crusher products, try them out. Yeah, I think you'll like them. Hey guys, sorry to interrupt the episode. Hope you're enjoying it. We want to take a quick second and got Devin Leonard here actually talk about one of our great partners at Hunter's Box Club. So you've heard us talk about it in the past. You've seen Clint support on CC Hunt Files. Maybe you've subscribed in the past and got some shirts. If you forgot about it or you don't know what it is, Devin's going to break it down for you.
That's right, guys. So we've designed a t-shirt for the Working Class Bow Hunter crew, and we're going to give you guys this box for free. All we ask is that you guys cover shipping. Mm-hmm. Now, the episode before, we said that we were going to limit it to 100. Well, before we could actually stop it, we had 140 people take advantage of that offer. So we now have to print more shirts no matter what. So what we're going to do is we're going to print another 140. So that means we have another 100 boxes that can go out. You have to order before November.
For the end of November.
Yep. Before the end of November. And there's only going to be 100. And this time we have to stop it because we won't have time to print before the next month.
Right. And if we sell 100 more, Devin's going to pay for my tag to go on a coos deer hunt in Mexico.
Yeah.
So I really want to go to Mexico and do this, and I really want Devin to eat his words and have to pay for my tag. So if you can help us out with those 100 boxes, it's the price of shipping.
Yep. So guys, what's super cool, this is going to be an exclusive t-shirt designed just for Working Class Bow Hunter. Eric, okay. Kurt, do you want to talk about the shirt?
Yeah. So we wanted to do a kind of like a whitetail camp type design. And I was like, it'd be cool to do like a Working Class Bow Hunter studio or like a cabin, like in the woods and all this, you know, just like the classic hunting camp tradition, that us whitetail hunters love so much. And, Devin's designer's like, well, whitetails are cool, but here's an elk instead. and it came out. I was like, it's actually super, super cool. I was like, run it with the elk. The elk's cool. I just killed an elk.
Yeah.
It kind of fits. So, the design's really cool. I haven't seen a design quite like it. So I'm pretty pumped on it. The elk is cool. It's a good touch.
Yep. Now, guys, the only way to take advantage of the offer to send Kurt to Mexico is you have to click the link in the podcast notes. If you click any other link, it's not going to give you guys that offer, and you won't get the t-shirt. So click the link in the podcast notes, and the t-shirt and box is yours.
Yep.
1 to 3 surprise item in every box.
There's some good stuff in there, too.
Yeah. So in this giveaway, you guys are going to get the Working Class Bow Hunter t-shirt. You're going to get a Working Class Bow Hunter.
And CC Hunt Files koozie.
And then you're also going to get the measuring tape.
The measuring tape, sweet.
From the Working Class Bow Hunter to tape out your next big whitey.
That's right. That's right. Well, thanks, buddy. I'm excited.
Okay.
Help me go to Mexico. I feel like I'm trying to win a sweepstakes. Awesome. I just want you to lose this like bet. Like, well, dude, if we buy 100 more.
Dude, I'm going to lose no matter. Well, yeah. So I'm going to lose because Mexico is not cheap.
Unless people just don't want me to go, and they're just like, no.
100 boxes, you get to go to Mexico, dude. That's a good deal for you, bro.
Well, I appreciate it.
And not only that, dude, I want you to experience Mexico because you're going to have fun.
It'll be a blast. All right, guys. Thanks for supporting this. Back to the episode. Hope you're enjoying it. It's like we were just in them. Like, the game plans and the strategy and the go, we're going to get on this bench and see, and you're going to sit back here in Cal Call and go after it. That's so much fun. We had a blast.
Yeah, dude.
And we covered some
some ground, man. We're chasing a bugle. And next thing you know, it's like, oh shit, we're way up here. You know, it was such a good time. But we just couldn't make it happen. And Trey's like, hey man, let's come on out for a couple days. And I'm like, cool. Got this tag, had built the points. My wife's cool with it. So everybody's
and
cool.
Dude, how cool is that, that you got the full experience? You got to experience the awesome rut. You got to experience rifle hunt, the late season. You connected with Franco,
yeah,
you know, more than what you did at the camp before.
Yeah, we got quality time.
And dude, that's what hunting's all about. You know what I mean? It's like having those experiences.
Yep.
Having that good time. And dude, like, you didn't kill for a reason on the archery hunt.
Everything happens for a reason.
Yep. And you killed for a reason on the rifle, dude.
So we go in first day, Franco and I, and we knew bad weather was coming. Remember that, Franco, like the first morning out?
Oh, yeah.
And
we both didn't want to be in it.
Yeah, we're like, do we need to make quick work? We got like 2 days before it gets nasty. So we go, and I'm always weird about horses because I'm still like intimidated by them, you know?
That's my fault.
But I'm getting way better with the horses, I feel like.
Yeah, you're doing good.
Yeah, you like Walter.
What's that, Franco?
I said, you like Walter.
Dude, all right, we're going to get to Walter. I almost shot a horse and just paid Trey whatever it would have costed our insurance to replace it. So... it's only because I know Trey. I've been like, hey, dude, listen, you'd have done the same.
It was a rental horse. It wasn't my horse.
Hey, I've seen Trey shoot a horse, so yeah, you're good.
Hey, every good cowboy.
That was a joke, by the way.
No, I haven't.
Was this another rental horse?
So, yeah, it was a rental horse.
It was a rental. So, but the first day in, we go in, and we see, right away, we heard a half bugle, right, Franco?
Yeah. Yeah, the first morning.
Yep, so... keep that part in mind. We're going up. We're starting to switch back up this hillside. We hear like a half Franco.
Oh, yeah.
A half Franco. Half bugle. And then we get up top, see
and
some
I called
cows.
It a raghorn.
Yeah, you're like.
I called it a raghorn. I was like, oh, yeah, a little rag.
Don't worry about that raghorn, Kurt. Shut your mouth. We're going up here. So I'm like, all right, don't guide your guide. All right, we're going up this
don't
mountain.
Don't guide your guide.
So we seen some cows. And then... yeah. We move over in that one big glassing spot you had. We seen a 5-point cutting across, and he bedded down. We actually we watched him bed down, and then we made this big game plan. Like, all right, we're going to loop around and come down and crank this 5-point and try and get in on him. So Franco,
yeah, because we were pretty pumped up right off the bat. Let's go shoot this thing, but let's get closer.
Let's get closer because it was too far to shoot. And Franco, you marked on the map where you thought he bedded, like roughly. And we go all the way around and drop down on this bull, and he was on the dot where this thing was. You couldn't have been more perfect. Like,
legit.
And we get 90 yards of this bull, and Franco, I'll let you tell this story from here.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, drop the pin. We circle around, park the horses. I'm like, okay, you know. It's got to be right down through here. So we start creeping down through and I'm just, you know, I'm feeling it. I'm like, okay, I got to be within 100 yards. Step around this tree. I see the gold, throw up the binos. I'm like, dang, I just snuck up on a bull at 90 yards. This is awesome. So I'm like, okay, Kurt, what do you want to do? And then Kurt's all checking it out. And then the bull's kind of looking at me and I'm like, hey, don't move too much. And so, you know, we're kind of playing this game for like 30 seconds and, you know, I'm looking at its horns, and I can see it's got a small second and a small third on one side. And what Kurt, you know, told me what he wanted to kill, this wasn't the bull. But in my mind, you know, I'm in kill mode. So I'm like, hey, 5x5, this is what you want. You got the gun in your hand. Bull stands up. I'm like, I look at Kurt. I'm like, this is the golden moment.
Here's your chance. Here's your chance.
Yeah, this is it. Here you go. Like, shoot him. Like, this 90 yards. Like, this is badass. We just snuck up on this bull. And you're like, I can't see the horns. And I know it instantly. I'm like, oh, it's not big enough. So, you know, Kurt just, you know, the bull takes off. And Kurt's, you know, nonchalant, mellow. He's like, ah, that was awesome. That was freaking cool. You know, high five.
It was cool.
He told to pass him up. And, yeah, it was just a cool, you know, get in close, stalk them, see a bull elk day one, first hour.
It was so badass, man. It worked out perfect. Yeah. It was a successful hunt. Like, we had that bull dead to rights, you know. And basically, dude, we were kind of, we were on assassin mode that first day. We went up, kind of talked about what we just did. We're having a good time, bullshitting, talking, all that stuff. And then, of course, a good mountain nap in, some glassing. And then we had some daylight on the way down, and we snuck back in on another group of elk on the same hillside, and like real close. And we just kind of laid low to see if a bull would pop up with them. And but it was cool because you and I looked at each other like, dude, we just snuck in on a like two times in one day on some elk, like right in the wheelhouse. So it's kind of a cool feeling.
Yeah, that was cool. We did do that twice because, yeah, we took those naps. And then as we were walking back to the horses, we were just cruising, I don't know, three-quarter level on the mountain coming across. And then it was like, boom, there's a cow. There's a calf. Oh, there's a spike. And we were looking for this bull that was, you know, pushing 320. I kept seeing him every day during deer season. That's why we were in there. And, we were totally in assassin mode. That was super fun. And then that was pretty much day one, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It was a blast. A very successful feeling day. But that's what's cool about that. Like, even if, like, you didn't shoot one, but you could have, and you saw animals, you still feel like...
You feel good.
It was a good day,
yeah,
you know?
It was a good day.
You feel confident, like, if it was the bull we wanted to shoot, we could have done it.
Yeah.
So it's, like, good practice.
Yeah. And we had, like, kind of a game plan of, like, how we were going in there. We were going to hit this section of the mountain, hit that section of the mountain, and then by day three, we were going to have that 320 bull found. That was, like, the motto.
Right, right. So we're going in confident day two, and we get out. We head up to the same area, and so keep in mind to the listeners out there, we're riding in on horses in the dark. So we have Frank was on his horse. We have Miyagi the mule, and I'm on my horse, which I named Walter because he had a number for a name. He's a rental horse, so I'm like, all right, I'm gonna call this one Walter. It just seemed right. Old Walt and I, we're just cruising in the dark, and he's doing okay. And then we start getting to like the base of the mountain where we're going to start like switchbacking. And old Walt, all of a sudden, it's like I'm riding a four-wheeler. I try and get him to follow Franco and Miyagi up the hill. And I'm like, dude, this horse doesn't really want to do this. And it could have just been me not knowing how to like discipline a horse. Trey would probably say that's the reason why, but... or maybe not. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know Walter.
Well, Walter was a dick, Trey. So, but Frank and I were kind of just joking around about this horse. Just like we gave him this like fake personality. And I'm like, fucking Walt, you know?
Was it a paint?
No, it wasn't a paint horse. It might as well have just been. Dude, if it's going to be stubborn, it might as well be gay too. Right, Casey? So I'm... Shots fired. I love Kate. Do you have any horses?
No.
Would you own a paint horse? Do you think they're pretty?
Yes.
I said that paint horses are pretty, and Trey scolded me. I said he said I need to work on my cowboy etiquette.
Well, I like horses, so I'm not too picky.
What's the deal with the paint horse?
They just suck.
Okay, let me tell you this story real quick. Can I tell the story, Trey, the paint horse story? I didn't know this was taboo for cowboys. There's one paint horse in the stall, and it was like up on the mound, like looking all majestic. I'm like, that's a pretty horse. And Trey looks at me and goes, we need to work on your cowboy etiquette. I'm like, what? And he goes, I never get caught dead on that thing. And I'm like, what? I'm like, all right, well, yeah, paint horses suck. I don't know.
Not a big fan of Little Joe. Okay.
I don't know why the rental company likes to send them to me. But
they laugh at you?
Yeah, so I will explain it. So we own about, 55, 60 head of horses ourselves. But between all my camps, it takes about 75 to 80 head of horses to run our operation.
That's crazy. So why paint horses? Why are they not as cool? It's because they're pretty?
No, because they give out. Like, I mean, there's good ones. Don't get me wrong.
So the colors directly correlate with the temperament.
I just think they're ugly, for one. But it seems like when I have a horse that always gives out on me in the mountain or something, it's like a paint. Like if I had a client horse that give out.
Is it true that – so color of a horse can directly relate to temperament? Or attitude?
No.
Is it the color or is it the action?
I think they're kind of their own breed almost.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's good ones. I've been around some good ones, but for some reason, them and Appies just kind of.
What's an Appie?
Appaloosa.
They kind of look like a paint. They're spotted a little bit.
On the rear end, right?
Yeah.
I got a spotted booty.
The saying goes, you know why Indians ride paints and Appaloosas?
So by the time they get to war, they're mad enough to fight.
Oh, damn. That's awesome.
Oh, boy.
That one might be spicy. That's hilarious. Okay.
Let's go.
So Walter was Nora Paint or Appaloosa, right? Is that how you say it?
Appaloosa, yeah.
Walt was just...
a big fat idiot.
A Walter. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So Frank was kind of laughing at me because I'm like... I don't know. I'm kind of cussing the source.
Just kicking and looking at me. Just staring. Just kicking and staring at me and not going nowhere. And I'm like, oh, man, we ain't getting up to the spot. Okay.
Yeah, we weren't covering ground fast on old Walt. So, but, like, Frank goes with his mule, switch backing up, and my horse is like, I'm going to go over here. And I'm like, you fucking idiot. You know, I'm starting to get frustrated. And I'm, like, trying to steer him. And it, I don't know. It was kind of comical a little bit, but. We get up about to the point.
You walked it.
I did at one point, but it's almost like Walter could see the future. So I think maybe he could have been psychic. And the verdict's still out. We're still trying to channel.
Yeah, he knew the elf were there.
Yeah, yeah. So we get to where the day before we heard that half bugle, and Frank was like, just a raghorn. Don't even look over there. And so I'm like, okay, noted.
It was still dark. It was still dark, okay?
It was still dark when we heard the half bugle. But it's kind of breaking gray light. At this point, and we get up about to that same point, and Walt just freezes on the mountain while Franco and the mule keep going, and I'm kicking the ever. Trey's giving me some tips to get a horse to like cooperate a little better, and I'm implementing them plus with a little more aggression than I normally would have. And Walt's just like, I'm just gonna stand here, and you're not changing my mind. So I'm kicking him to try and get him to go, and he's just like, nope, just like a statue. So I get off. Pull him up. As I get off to pull him up, just a bugle just rah, across the canyon where we heard that half bugle before. And I'm like, come on, Walt, you motherfucker. And I get up there and I'm like, did you hear that, Franco? And he's like, yeah, I heard it. So
that's not a raghorn.
It's not a raghorn, turns out.
Definitely not a raghorn anymore.
I'll let you tell this story how you want to paint this picture here, Franco, because this is where it gets fun.
All right, yeah, so, yeah, Walt's not coming. You're coming up the trail, bull's bugling. And, yeah, gray light's cracking. I throw up my binos, and I'm like, hey, there's some elk right there. Awesome. There's a couple cows. Oh, yeah, there's a bull. And now I could clearly see six on one side, five on the other. And I was like, hey, game on. Here we are. Click the rangefinder. It's like 450. And I got a really nice gun. I bought it for the job. I got an awesome Husqvarna scope. I got a Gunworks gun. I shoot a 28 Nosler and great bipod system. I think it's an Atlas bipod. But anyways.
Badass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it does the job. And I try not to shoot out past, you know, 600-700 yards. I think that's a very good, consistent shot that I can perform with it. And you know, it's straight downhill in front of us. It's, you know, 65-degree angle. You know, I need to get Kurt prone. And, you know, I see some down trees that are kind of like a couple feet off the ground. They're horizontal. And anyways, I'm like, hey, let's go down to that log. So we go down to that log. I get Kurt set up. The bull's kind of pushing his cows back and forth. What is it, October 21st? Kurt?
Right around there. I should remember.
It'd be the 22nd of your hunt. The 22nd.
Yeah. Well, no.
They're still rutting and they're bugling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's, you know, and typically that doesn't happen too much in the West, but this morning we rode right into an awesome herd, rut frenzy. Cows are everywhere all over the hillside and this bull's just pushing cows. So anyways, we get set up. Bull's pushing his cows back and forth. And it's a solid 300-inch bull. It's exactly what Kurt wants. And so the bull never gave us a shot. Is that right, Kurt? Because he was going back and forth, and you just couldn't get on.
He was, like, kind of cresting the hill, and he'd, like, chase some cows over, then kind of come back, but he would just never stop. And it was just, like, the top of the hill was kind of cresting his vitals in half. You know what I mean? He's just over the top of the very top. So... Yeah, so he ended up just basically pushing cows over and never came back over. But we still hear bugling, and that's when Franco, you spotted another bull basically down and to the left of the same mountainside.
And
yeah, so yeah, there's cows all over that hillside. We're sitting at 450. Yeah, that you didn't feel good putting that first shot on that first bull. So that bull took off. There's more cows on that hillside, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, there's got to be another bull here. I mean, there's just too many cows. And then all of a sudden, I see this big, bright, blonde body down there, and throw up the glass, and I'm like, oh, nice 5x5. That's right on Kurt's menu. This is perfect. All right, Kurt, you see the bull? I think it's somewhere like 600 to 650, somewhere in there. And I turned the turret, but the day prior, I had not put the turret all the way back to zero. So I'm cranking this turret to 600, and Kurt's steady on the log. I'm like, okay, Kurt, bull's broadside. Your breathing looks good. Go ahead, buddy. Shoot. And boom, Kurt shoots. I don't see no dust fly. I don't see nothing. And then I'm like, rack another one, and the bull's just standing there. Racks another one, shoots, boom, I see nothing again. And I see all the elk, you know, running downhill, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what just happened? And Kurt's just like, I don't know, man, I was right on him. And I'm like, I don't know what happened. And he gives me the gun back. I'm going to go put it in the scabbard up there in the mule, and I'm just sitting there kind of pondering myself. And I look down at my turret, and I could see the threading underneath my turret. And, you know, I'm pretty good with my gun. Killed 30 plus animals with it. I know what I'm doing, but I guess today I had a little bit of a hiccup, and you know, I looked at the turret and I'm like, oh great, we were shooting at 3,000 yards.
right away, Frank. I'm like, dude, I suck at shooting rifles. I shouldn't even shot. And Franco, we realized that. And Franco's like, dude, I'm sorry. And I'm like, it's not a big deal. Like, it's cool. But I just missed him so bad that he didn't even know he'd been shot at, and he was still bugling. He was still bugling. Yeah. So Frank, we kind of resolved this issue. Frank was like, dude, I'm sorry. I'm like, I'm not mad. Let's just figure something out.
I felt so bad, Kurt. I felt horrible.
I know you did. I'm like, dude, it's all good. Like, we're hunting, man. You know what I mean? Like, it's all good.
It's hunting.
And I feel like I don't know, in my head, I felt like I was trying to smile at you as to where you wouldn't, but then I looked back at the, I just feel like maybe I didn't express that I was like really not mad. I wasn't mad. So maybe you thought I was mad, but I really, but anyway, he was still bugling. I just missed him so bad. I don't even think he knew what was going on.
They had no idea where that shot came from. No, nothing. They went down the draw, came up the other side, and they were screaming.
And Franco and I pretty much got the turret thing resolved. We looked at each other like, we got to fucking go right now. Like, if we're going to get this bull again, we got to go right now. So we run up back to the horses. I gave Walt the middle finger a little bit. And then we lead them, and we're just running to try and get to the other side to get some glass on the elk again and find the bull. And we get looped around, tie the horses up. And we set up. How many times did we like get prone and set up to glass? Like,
and I think 5 or 6 times.
In like a 10 minute, maybe not even 10 minute. It felt a little longer than probably what it was, but
probably was. But yeah, no, we ran. Yeah. We, you know, he was bugling. We ran down, tied up, came out to the edge of the ridge, glassed up the cows. We were like, okay, let's set up here. We set up. Bull never came out. It wasn't like a real square on look to the timber. And we're shooting 450 yards, and we set up 5 different times. We were clearing bushes out. We were, you know, getting all positioned in the prone, and finally we turned that bull up. And
dude, it was perfect though too, because when we did turn him up, he was in like the perfect pocket to shoot in. And I'm like, oh, there he, okay, this is good. And I just remember remember the horizontal tree.
Yeah, that was the most frustrating part, and that was another strike for me. But anyway, you know, the bull's 450. Is, you know, it's right in this gap. It's next to the horizontal tree, and you know, I kept saying horizontal, but really the tree was more at like a diagonal. But it was close to horizontal.
Yeah, it was pretty diagonal. I'm looking for a horizontal tree. I'm like, I don't fucking see a horizontal tree. But then I finally found the bull. So then we get on it, and you were on them. I'm like, all right, I feel good. Doosh, you know, crank off. And then I can't – in the pocket he was in, I couldn't find him again after the shot. So I'm like, I don't know if I hit this bull right away. and I'm like trying to find this pocket again desperately. And
yeah.
Franco, I guess you saw it more clear, so I'll let you tell this part.
Oh yeah, no, I mean I had you cranked up to 30 power in the scope,
and that was badass.
One excellent shot, and I saw the ripple in the skin, and you know it was a little far back, but it was right where it needed to be. It went right through both lungs, and man, bull hunched up, you know, ears pinned back, did a little spin, did a little, you know, little wobble there, and I bet within 20 seconds he fell and didn't even go 15 yards, piled up.
Yeah, and, I remember Franco being like, it was, "He's dead," and I'm like,
"Money shot."
I did the whole Luke Bryan. Is he down? Is he down?
Is that what Luke Bryan said?
You see where he shoots his white tail, and he's like, "Is he down?"
Oh,
and he does
all
that.
Jacked.
Yeah, that's pretty much me because Franco was like casually like, "He's dead. He's dead. He's down. He's down." Dead. I'm like, "Is he down? Is he really down?"
We were hugging.
Oh, it was awesome.
Crying.
Oh. And it was like so early in the day. We had all day.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, it was 8:40.
Yeah.
It was perfect.
Nice.
So we sat up there and just kind of like replayed it and talked about it and just like, it was a good feeling, you know? So we went down and we get over there and Franco filmed me walking up on it, which was cool.
That's legit.
Yeah.
God, it was a cool experience, man. Just elk are incredible. They're way bigger than you think even. You know, like I knew they're big.
Yeah.
But it's like, I thought African animals were big. You know, like a sable. I'm like, that's a big ass animal.
So where's your elk hunt rank, like between your new experience hunts that you've done? So your mule deer, your Africa, your elk.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where does it?
Because
that seemed like the way you tell the story, dude, that seems like pretty awesome. Like
100%.
You know?
Even, you know, I'm a bow hunter first, I think. Like,
yeah.
In Wyoming, everything's. You know, it's not like going out in the Midwest and cranking a whitetail in a field with a rifle.
Yeah.
You know, like I had a different appreciation for rifle hunting. Even, you know, I wouldn't have the same appreciation for rifle hunting here.
Right.
But like the terrain and all the factors that play in, it's tough. It's not easy.
Right.
To
right.
kill a bull, it's hard work no matter what you're hunting with. But yeah, I mean, definitely one of the top experiences. Like I rank my mule deer as being like hard to touch by anything.
Yeah.
Just because of emotional.
Papa Dave, archery, mule, yeah.
Yeah, being up there with you guys, like, that's hard to even come close.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I rank this elk hunt definitely in the top conversation. Like,
good experience, yeah. One of the
great experience. It was the best, man.
Dude, it goes back to like our last podcast. It's like whatever you're hunting in the moment is the best hunt.
The best hunt.
Whether it's elk, whitetail, bear,
yeah. Coos, well, I'll tell you this: no matter what I'm hunting, I never ever take it for granted.
Yeah.
Like I know, like in the moment, it's like, man, this is such a sweet moment. You don't get to live in the moments after a harvest or a kill or whatever you call, however one wants to determine. It's like that's the sweet moments of success where it's like that's what you thought about. I mean, of course, yeah. Hunt's a lot more than that. Like, every hunt I've ever been on with Trey and Devin and even recoveries like we did with Trey's buck, like, those are the best moments.
Dude, mm-hmm. Yes.
You know? Even though I wasn't there and didn't watch Trey shoot that buck, but recovery's, like, the best moments.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what Franco and I had, you know? We went up and we're high-fiving, dude. We're like, dude, we got all day. We got quesadillas for lunch. Let's make a little fire, have lunch. And we just set up like 20 yards over from the bowl, and we're just shoving our faces full of quesadilla, and we brought Mountain Dews up there, and we're just like, you know, Judd would be proud.
Did Judd bring them up for you or what?
But it was cool. We propped this bowl up, so he was like sitting all pretty, and we just sat there and ate lunch and watched him. And it's like, man, we got all day.
Yeah.
This is great. So we...
Yeah.
Basically, Franco taught me, showed me how to do the quartering, how to do the rib roll, all the cool stuff, get all the meat out. And we took all the meat we could, for the record.
The rib? So you guys took rib meat?
Yeah, he showed me how to do the rib roll.
Damn, that's legit.
It was cool, man.
That's cool.
I watched it. Franco's a magician, man. I was watching him do that. I'm like, rib roll just sounds fun. And to watch him do it, I was like, that's pretty cool.
Nice.
So,
just carve all the ribs. Yeah, you know, going through each one, carving them, and peeling it all towards the front of the animal.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's pretty slick how you can do it. Have you ever seen someone do it?
No, I haven't.
It's really cool. It all just comes off as like in a piece. But yeah, man, I mean, cut the back straps out, and it's like yeah, you can't even wrap your head around how much meat is there. You know, it's like, for we've all held whitetail backstrap or like a mule deer backstrap. You grab an elk backstrap and you're like, we're rich in meat. You know what I mean? I feel like Joe Rogan up there. Yeah. It's like my testosterone levels are going through the roof. And then a
4 foot piece of meat.
Yeah, right. So we get sweet Miyagi loaded up with the corners and all the meat and the rack and the cape. And we get down this drainage, right? This is the next part of the story. Am I missing something, Franco? I don't want to skip ahead.
No, you're doing good. We loaded Mr. Miyagi, and Mr. Miyagi didn't really want to take the head, but we got the head on his back, and can I just take over from here?
So you can keep going.
Yeah. So we get the head on Miyagi, and Miyagi's, you know, nose is flaring, eyes are bulging. He's looking at me like, dude, what are you? Why'd you put this animal on my back? I'm like, Miyagi, you did this last week. Come on, dude. Like, see eye to eye with me, please. And
see eye to eye. So,
be my friend, please.
Come don't on, make me look together. Bad, Miyagi.
Yeah.
Don't do this.
Oh, exactly, man. Oh, man. So, and then, you know, Mr. Miyagi's like, he's 1,000 pounds. He's got to be. I don't know, Trey, you think he's 1,000 pounds?
Oh, yeah. 1,100, 1,200.
He's huge.
Big boy.
He's big.
Yeah.
But Franco and I were pumping Miyagi up, and we're like, dude, you're the MVP right now. He got cocky, dude. He got cocky.
Yeah. Yeah.
Miyagi's a mule.
He's a mule.
You got to go about mules a little differently than you do just horse.
Are they more ornery?
No, if they decide they're not going to do something, it's phrase stubborn as a mule.
Okay.
Stubborn as a mule.
Forgot about that one.
Yeah.
You get something, a mule gets something in his head, like, it's not easy to change his mind. And, like, you got to kind of go slower around him. Like, they're sensitive around, like, dead animals and stuff, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't just go waving. If you poke them or spook them or something there, good luck.
Mm.
It's a chore. So yep. You got to read situations before they happen, and you can avoid all of that.
Well, I don't know if that's a poke at us, Franco, but apparently we didn't read the situation.
and
tie them loads down with lash ropes so they can't shift and jab them.
Yeah.
All sorts of things.
Well, go ahead, Franco. I'll let you continue to tell this one. It's in your hands now, Franco.
So, there I was, looking at Miyagi, looking at me. yeah. I saw the horn hitting his butt, so I started reading the situation. I'm like, what would Trey do? Oh, he would totally fix these horns real quick. And this is like after we got 200 yards down the hill. We're in like a little open meadow now, and you know, we got 500 yards of the road. We are home free. But I see the horns hitting the butt, and I'm like, hey, what would Trey do? Let's, you know, I'm jumping the situation. So anyways, I start messing with the head, and, you know, I got my ropes loose and whatnot, and I don't know what happened, but Miyagi just freaked out, started doing a 360 around the tree, and the horns were underneath him. But at the meantime, he, like, scooted his butt and hit Kurt and threw Kurt like 15 feet
dude,
in the air. And
I went flying.
How did he hit you?
I don't know. All I know.
He just bumped into you.
He had to just.
Like with his butt, with the saddle pack?
I think with his butt, like his rear right quarter. I don't know.
Just his butt. That's all it was.
I just went flying. I just remember being like, oh shit. And the next thing I know, I'm like landing on my left shoulder and I went rolling. Like I kind of landed on my bino harness and my left shoulder at the same time.
Yeah.
And my shoulder's already kind of been irritated. And I remember just being like, uh-oh. Mm-hmm. And I hit the dirt so hard, man. But I was like, when I got up, I'm like, I fell down this hill. Like, how'd I end up down here? But I guess with an 1,100 pound animal, dude, it hurt.
1,100 pounds.
You know what I mean? When a big
you
ass.
You rolled like 3 or 4 times. I saw your face and back like 3 or 4 times.
Like, but it happened so fast. It was just like I was trying to help him fix it. And the next thing you know, I'm like, oh, shit. And then I'm just like, oh, I don't know. It's hard to explain. I don't know. It went so fast. I don't really know what happened exactly. But I just remember I was in the air.
You jumped so fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was all right. But then we're like, oh, shit. All right, let's get them back on there. So we try to put the head and all that back on, which maybe we should have just collected ourselves for a minute. And
yeah,
Miyagi freaks again, but this time I'm not getting thrown. So, like, I kind of end up going Franco's direction, and I grabbed Franco, and we kind of went barreling.
Wait, what?
You saved me from Yagi.
I don't know. It was just my reaction, whatever. Like, I just grabbed him, and we went rolling.
Nice.
And then my elk and everything gets on the ground, and he's, like, stepping between the brow tines. I thought my elk was shattered.
I thought I killed Miyagi. I was like, oh, gosh.
Yeah, we were nervous there for a minute. But anyway, we were like, okay, well, this isn't going to work. And the whole time I'm like, what would Trey do right now? Like, what would Trey have done? What was the move? What would Trey Heiner have actually done? Probably a lot of things differently, but also it makes the story better.
Yeah. He would have tied his back foot to his neck. That's what we should have done, well, right?
If he was dancing around like that, I'd tie a hind leg up on him.
And just let him free.
I've packed.
I think I'm still learning.
50-100 plus elk on that mule.
So,
but he can be a little bit snorty around him at times. That, like, typically I'll cape take the cape off the skull and stuff. I mean,
like the face freak him out.
Yeah, sometimes that stuff does on a mule.
So Trey, why do you think that?
Get closer to your mics, guys. A little closer to your mic, Devin.
On it, or why do you think?
You know the scent. It's dead, you know, stuff. I mean, sometimes they just get in their head. It's like,
yeah,
kind of a scary situation. Every meal's different.
It does make, I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, so, like, I have had meals that they won't let you load them with until you cape them off, you know, stuff. Or sometimes you got to just kind of, you got to go slow around them and not put up in their faces and stuff. And then once you do get them on loaded, they kind of want to scatter. You just bump on their chain halter, you know, and give their mind something different. I mean, you can avoid a lot of situations, but it takes just years of experience reading body mannerism on you. I mean, I can just tell what Emil's thinking, like, by his body mannerism, you know?
Because I feel like sometimes you got to, like, cater to, like, their needs.
Yeah.
Then another time you got to show them who's boss, is what I've learned from you, watching you. Is that true or no?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you got to know.
You can,
like,
tell if they're just being a dick or if they're actually really scared. I mean, if you're scared of something, like, and somebody just keeps running at you with it, you're going to run.
Then you need, like, to cater.
If you talk them out, like, hey, you know what, just all right, go on.
Yeah.
Then, and if you're still, like, freaking out, then, yeah, I'm going to tie your leg up to your neck and
and let you do it.
And strap it onto where you can't buck it off. And then
we'll just let him get over it?
I like that.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. But anyway, Frank and I are just like, damn it. So we end up just putting the elk, the head, and the cape on the pack, and I just walked it down to the road. It wasn't that far, thankfully, but
500 yards. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah,
dude, you know what? Perfect. Experiences like that is what makes it. You know what I mean?
It was awesome.
Like, your shoulder was hurt for a little bit. Does it feel better now?
Not really.
Okay, well, you're still messed up. But you know what?
It's worth tagged out now, so now you're, I can go to the doctor out and look, get it looked at. I'm pretty sure something's torn in it, I think.
But, dude, like, you know.
Not from Miyagi, from a previous horse incident, but
from your BMX riding. Come on.
That's that pump track.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pump track that I never finished. Yeah. Yeah. By the way, Franco's a BMX guy, too.
For real?
Yeah, we learned that on the last day.
You guys connected on that hunt. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, and I didn't know that until, like, after I killed my bull on the way out. I'm like, fuck, we would have had a lot more to talk about, man. I didn't know, but now we know for next time. But we got him out of there, and it was so much fun. We had a great time.
That's cool.
Yeah, and it's always good to pack that, you know, sometimes it's always nice to put the head, like, on a backpack and,
absolutely,
you know, carry it down to the trailhead or whatever, so.
Yeah, it was great.
You got the full experience, I felt like, in a quick time.
Yeah, man, I'm thrilled with my bull, too.
What was that? Was that on day two?
Day two, yeah. Morning of day two.
That's legit.
But it felt good, man. But it also felt like I just continued my archery hunt. But it was great, man. I'm super pumped with them. Good 5x5 on his left main beam. He's got, like, this cool little kicker that comes off the back. Just, dude, they're incredible animals. They're just neat. They smell good in a weird, like, ruddy type way, you know? It's like a big buck smell is good. You just kind of, like, it stinks so good type of thing. The whole thing was cool, man. Like, seeing a dead elk lay there, like, you know, going back, it's like how big of an animal it is. It's crazy.
Dude, I remember when you called me and I was like, dude, how big are those bulls, dude?
They're badass.
They're so big. Well, dude, they're so big. I don't ever want to hunt an elk without a horse ever again.
Well, I learned. I have some theories. I have some theories now after seeing a big dead bull, and maybe we can talk about that. It's going to be some unpopular opinions, but I don't mind doing it. But I can't imagine like seeing like the bull Trey killed, like a 370 type bull. I can't imagine the body on that. It has to be so insane. Like, few hundred pounds, 400 pounds bigger than like a bull I shot, or
yeah, sometimes yeah.
See, that is so crazy, huge.
Yeah,
but I have a theory, and maybe this is going to be an unpopular opinion, but I'm going to say it.
Okay,
because maybe I'm wrong, because I just don't know. But I bet you a lot of the guys that are doing the backcountry DIY elk hunt stuff that don't have horses and mules leave a lot of meat in the field.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. I can go. I don't really want to say name. Franco knows we packed some bulls off for them. Some really, really popular industry guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, they left so much meat. There's no way they had all their elk. We packed two bulls off there on a pack horse.
No kidding. Well, dude, because looking at it, and that's kind of the conversation we had at camp when we got back to camp, Trey. You're like, now seeing how big they are, what's your opinion on the guys that pack them? There's no way. I mean, if there is.
I mean, they're boning them out and stuff.
I guess if you did that, maybe, but.
I mean, there's some guys that are making multiple trips and doing it, but you ain't getting elk out in one trip.
No, it'd take you a while.
Even two guys, one trip.
Do you think two guys can do it in one trip?
I don't think
boned
so.
Boned out?
No, with a head and cape, definitely not.
No way. That's so much weight.
Yeah.
Dude, because imagine if all these guys that are like, we were eight miles in.
It takes two horses to pack out one bull elk. I've packed them out in one, but it's too much for a horse.
Really?
Like it takes two horses to pack them out.
You go on an elk hunt, and you got to prepare.
And for the guys that actually do it.
Everything that's there.
And for the guys that actually do it, dude.
Mad props to them.
Mad props.
But I bet you there's a lot of motherfuckers. They're leaving neck meat. They're leaving rib meat. They're leaving, I'm sure, I don't know what else.
Well, it's not, you're not required to take out rib or neck meat in Wyoming anyways.
Yeah.
But even at that, just your quarters and your back straps and loins and stuff, they're not getting all that.
Dude, it's so much. But it just made me think about it a little bit. Like, you know, I guess at a certain point, if you're not willing to put in all that work, if you did a backcountry hunt without horses and mules, you have to, I think, if you're going to go way, way, way in to find elk and you're to the point where it's like three trips in and out with weight on your back or whatever it is probably not feasible. You almost have to like debate the ethical line of like, all right, now I'm too far to ethically get out all the meat that I need to get out to show this animal respect. I don't know. There's a debate there that I don't know a ton about. All I'm just saying is it makes me think a little bit about some of that stuff. So. Being fair.
There's a lot of people doing that stuff.
Well, I think what you need to do is have a plan. You need to think about that stuff.
That's it. Exactly. Yeah. That's it. But it was cool, though. It's cool experiences. I don't know. That's just like some things I thought about.
Hey, is Franco a coos deer hunter?
Yeah, I just shot one the other day. It was awesome.
What's up? Okay, Franco. So what I'm trying to do here is I'm trying to get Kurt to go to Mexico with me. So what I need you to do is spend the next 60 seconds on convincing Kurt on why he should go to Mexico.
Oh, I've talked his ear off about Mexico. He knows he needs to go.
Okay.
I'll go to Mexico. Yeah.
So this is the second commitment on the podcast.
That's right.
I'm going. I'll go.
Yeah.
As long as I can do the shows I have to do for business, if we can plan it between those, I'll go. I'm tagged out now, so I'm not going to hunt until then.
All right. So after ATA,
then I can go.
Be the best experience ever.
Hunter's Box will pay.
Did you hear what Franco just said?
Best experience ever. Hunter's Box will pay for the tag because I'm going to do marketing work for you guys.
We could probably work something out like that.
Okay.
Done. We could do that.
All right, then I'm going.
It'd be so much fun.
Should we do another round of boxes?
Yeah.
Another, like if we do another 100
let's do a Coos
T-shirts. Box. Dude, let's do another 100 T-shirts and I pay for Kurt's hunt to go to Mexico.
Okay. Sounds good.
We're going to have to figure that out.
We can do that.
When are we going to? Okay, we got to do that.
Tomorrow, so you're going to stay another day in Whitetail Hunt.
Done, dude.
We'll have a meeting.
You might as well stay another week.
You know what? I think that's a great idea.
Just stay until firearm season starts next.
This is all business now, huh?
Yeah, you got till Thursday. You can hunt till Thursday, and then you'd have to go after that because firearm season kicks in.
Is there? Can I use my tag on a firearm?
Nope.
Can I buy one?
Mm-mm. Well, maybe. You could maybe. Try. You got to be on the ball. You have to be there like right when they go on sale.
I bought mine like 5 days ago and got one.
Oh, they're open now. They're available.
Yeah, they came open, I think, on like October 18th.
I pre-apply, but it don't matter because I'm tagged out.
Tagged out!
But yeah, all right. Well, so 100 more right. boxes and then I'll go coos deer hunting.
I like that idea, dude. Let's do it.
Okay. I'll go then. Franco, you hear that? I'm going coos deer hunting.
That's, I'm very excited for you. I'm kind of jealous. So, have fun. It's, yeah, I just went coos deer hunting all last week, and just glassing for them is so fun. They're just the coolest animals.
Yeah, it'll be cool. Little baby whitetails.
Franco, have you been to Mexico?
Yeah, I've been to Mexico a few times. And
what are you doing around January 15th?
I am not doing anything.
Well, we're going to need to talk.
We can get another. Okay, can we get another tag?
I mean, we got two tags. We can split them, share them.
Is that how it works in Mexico?
Well, we got two tags. And we just can shoot what like you could shoot one. I could shoot.
I got you.
You could shoot both deer. Oh. But we only have two deer tags.
It's like a party thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I got you. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Cool.
So. Anyway, well, Franco, we'll talk.
Franco, you want to come guide us?
We tried to get Trey to go, but he won't go. But maybe he will now. It sounds like a party now, huh, Trey?
I've spent enough time down there for a little bit.
There's some Trey time stories, I think, we could
have. There are some major Trey time stories in Mexico.
Okay. Oh. We'll wait for the... We'll,
Patreon.
We need to do a Patreon segment, Trey time. It'll book you some hunts, I bet. Or cancel some hunts. Cancel. People are like, yeah, second thought. Hey, you're willing to get shit done.
That's we're just going to scare off the wrong kind of clients.
Honestly, there's a lot to that, I bet. Right?
Oh, yeah.
But no more California cowboys. Bad ones.
No bueno.
It's awesome. Well, Franco, thanks for calling in on this, dude. And I appreciate your friendship, man. I had a blast with you. Literally.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me on here, and I appreciate all your guys' friendships as well.
You got to get out here to the studio one of these days, man. We'll hang out. So you just let me know. We'll get you out here.
Looking forward to it, guys.
Get your butt to Wyoming.
I will. Yes, sir. You got it.
on it, boss. All right.
I'm going to go find a 220 giant in the morning. So let you know how it goes.
Okay, there you go. Good.
Awesome.
Good luck, buddy.
Awesome. Anybody got anything to add? Kind of a dual hunt segment. You know, we did the lion. That was delayed. Big delay on the lion hunt podcast. Yeah, it's all right, though. Hey, it's just about time to book your lion hunt if you want to go this year, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Maybe a little late, but...
Now we can still get you in.
All right, so the only thing we need to add is if you guys want to get a free hunter's box with the Working Class Bow Hunter t-shirt, all you got to do is click the link in the bio, and the box is yours for free.
Mm-hmm.
All we ask is that you pay shipping. So, guys, this is an exclusive t-shirt. If we sell another 100, I can't believe I'm doing this right now, because I could sell way more on Facebook ads, through Instagram ads, but I want Kurt to go to Mexico. So if you guys want, if you guys want Kurt to go to Mexico as well, all you got to do is get 100. All you got to do is take advantage of the 100 free t-shirts, and you're going to send your boy to Mexico. He may not come back, so you may not want to buy the t-shirts. He might die by the cartel. Who knows? Dude. I've had guns pulled on me. I made dinner at the cartel's house. This shit's gone crazy. Do it or don't, but send Kurt on a coos deer hunt.
I got a neck.
I'm out.
Dude. I'm in. All right, you know what to do. Go shoot your bow. We love you. Thanks, guys.